Hi, everybody. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I'm speaking very quietly because apparently some people don't like that there's some loud spikes sometimes on these podcasts, to which I would like to send out a sincere apology because I know that it's really difficult when you get all that free content that sometimes it's not of a podcast one. Do you know how much those motherfuckers get paid at podcast one? Of course they sound fucking clear. They're at podcast one. I'm literally on my bed. My duvet cover is in the wash, so I'm just sitting on like a scraggly duvet with a £2 candle. I'm like a very bad attempt at a sex film. And the drink that I'm drinking my diluting orange out of is a download plastic cup. It's not like I'm living the high life, people. But anyway, apparently somebody said, oh, your spike made me almost swerve off the road. Well, if you're listening to podcasts with us on the road, then you deserve it, because you shouldn't be listening to us when you're operating machinery. That's not what we have ever, ever claimed that you should do.
To be fair, Kenny, I think there is a disclaimer before you download the podcast. Do not listen to while operating heavy machinery, because we have been known to cause people to want to crash their vehicles. Not so much because they're laughing hysterically. They're just like, oh, fuck these guys. Talk about Raw. 45 minutes of banter. Fuck this. And then they just swerve off.
That's true. I've almost thought that we should like put the banter in like midway through Raw so nobody ever knows when it's coming. I'm here with David J. McCutcheon. Hi, David.
Hey, everybody. And we're also here with the Iron Sheik for all those loud spikes in the audio. Fucking bullshit!
I've ordered a new mic. Right? The other thing is, right, in full disclosure of honesty, right? So I'm gonna give you a sort of like delve into behind the scenes, inside the ropes. We record this on Skype.
Yeah.
I use a call recorder to record the call, and then I use the Audacity program to edit the podcasts. Now the thing is, I hate editing so much.
No one likes it. No one likes it.
I'm not going to pay someone to edit because I'm just not going to do that. So basically, if there's ever a point in a podcast where there's like a really loud spike or a really like bad transition, it's probably because I edited it. That's probably what's happened. However, Alan Proven, one of our listeners, pledgers, subscribers, friends, and fans, not fans, I hate the word fan, friend, he has suggested a thing called
Friend. He's a wonderful man, too, by the way.
We danced with him in Orlando.
I got so many hugs from that guy. That guy is essentially the Scottish version of me.
A ginger Scottish version of you, yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
But
he had suggested something called the Levelator, which apparently is going to level out some of the sound issues, so I'm going to do... The other problem... I'm going to take a picture of this. So I've got a blue snowball mic, but the problem is it broke, so like it doesn't have the stand anymore, so I basically hold it like a crystal ball, and then I forget how close to my mouth to have it or how far away... Well, never mind.
Kenny, can we roll this back a minute? First and foremost, you said that you love snowballing, right? And then you said that you were cupping a ball in your hands and you were holding it really close to your mouth. That's what I heard. Those are the three takeaway points that I just heard.
I think what people tend to know about me is I'm not someone who minces my words. So if I was getting teabagged, I would just tell you. I'm not gonna give you snowball, you know, euphemisms to get. I'd be like, listen, I was lying and I got teabagged and I was kind of okay with it. I would just tell you.
Yeah,
so if that ever happens, I'll come on the podcast and I will let you know if I ever get teabagged. It's not happened yet, but you know, I
mean, it's still early in your life.
Well, I mean, that's very kind of you to say. It looks like it's early in my life, but actually we're entering the latter stages. I do live in Glasgow, where the life expectancy is 41. So.
Right. You are, I remember whenever I went over to Glasgow and, Robert, he was telling me, it may have been you actually. You were like, don't discuss politics or anything, you'll get stabbed.
It's a very strange city. Glasgow's one of those places, like, you can't, like, so if you and I were out in a pub in Glasgow, and somebody called you an arsehole, I would be well within my right to go, you can't call him a fucking arsehole, but I'm allowed to call you an arsehole.
Of course.
I know you, I'm allowed to call you it. But if somebody doesn't know you, and
it's factually accurate. If the guy called me an asshole, I would go, touche, sir.
I you just proved the point, but yeah, you know, that's what would happen. But yeah, I mean, Glasgow is a fine city. I mean, so for all of our listeners in America or Australia, or I mean, we're very big in Kenya, I've heard. So,
oh,
you know.
I can imagine that we're huge in Kenya. I mean, you know, not in the pants, but
no, none of us are hung like Kenya. Let's be honest,
right?
There's just no chance. We could all team up together, and it would not equal one Kenyan man. I mean, that's just the bare bones of it.
No. I can confirm this. We all stayed together in a loft. So,
the thing about Glasgow is. What was I? What the fuck was I even going to say? You made me lose my train of thought. So for all of our friends in America and different countries, obviously over here, fish and chips is like a big thing, and you know people have fish and chips. But in the UK, you have chip shops, which is like French fries, not like potato chips. And in Scotland, even more specifically, so in England, if you go to like a chip shop, you get like a battered sausage or battered fish or like pies. In Scotland, we just changed the fucking game. We are not messing about with this. So here's what you can get in a Scottish chip shop. Now, in Scotland as well, I'm educating you here, folks. If you go and you get something with chips, so say you get a sausage with chips, it's called a supper. So you'd say, I want a sausage supper. Or if you get fish and chips, that's a fish supper. So if you want something with chips, it becomes a supper, right? That's the lingo. So if you're ever
that is so crazy.
If you're ever in a chippy, you need it. That's what you need to know. So we don't just have your fish and your battered sausage and all that shite. We have you get a Scotch pie in like butchers and stuff, which is just, you know.
Now the Scottish pie, is that any relation to the poontang pie?
I mean, depending where you go, a Scotch pie can taste better. If you get an individual, if you get a Scottish pie made from like a proper butcher's, it's poontang level. If you go to Greg's, it's almost like the Scottish pie has developed full blown AIDS, and is never warm. They just can't have warm pies.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I'm digressing.
A lot of bacteria.
So we have these Scottish pies which are meant to just be put in the oven and heated up, but of course in the chip shop it is deep fried, of course.
Obviously.
We have haggis in batter, deep fried. Black pudding in batter, deep fried. They get like these oven frozen pizzas and they deep fry the oven frozen pizza for you. That's a pizza supper. If you want to be really on the edge of taste, / deliciousness, you can get what's called a pizza crunch. I don't think I've talked about a pizza crunch before, but I should have. I should be proclaiming the joy of a pizza crunch. Now, it does make you feel like you're going to have a heart attack midway through, so David, I'd say to you to just have half of one.
I need to like stay away from it, basically.
Well, I was going to say...
A restraining order against the pizza crunch.
I was going to say half of one, but you know, you can stay away.
You're just trying to kill me, Kenny. That's all it is.
I just want you to experience honestly, seeing you bite into a pizza crunch that isn't, it's tremendous. But, so a pizza crunch is a half of like an oven frozen pizza dipped in batter and deep fried.
Oh my god.
It is sensational. And I know there's Scottish people listening to this, right? And like some of them are on like buses and some of them are on like, and they're nodding away and they're smiling because they know we're in that little weird club where this is acceptable food. And then
people talk about Americans eating that.
No, right. But I knew you were going to come back with that. And then there's all you fucking Americans, right, who are sitting listening to this going, oh, that's so disgusting. We would never have that. Have you seen your fucking portions?
Well, the portions are gigantic, Kenny, but I mean, fucking...
And like you guys do the...
Frozen pizza dipped in batter and fried.
At least that's just all hot stuff together. You guys do such weird shit, like French toast with sugar on it.
That's the best. Fuck
horrible.
Off.
Then you've got...
I will literally rip your dick off and shove it down your throat.
Mate, you've got a heart condition. You could barely get to the Antarctic and over here.
If you even...
One flight... Can you imagine eating airplane food?
Talk
dip?
Bad about French toast.
And then here's what else you do. Here's what else you do.
You can't even get French toast.
Here's what else you do. Here's what else you do, motherfucker. You have fucking donuts acting as a bun for a burger.
That shit's disgusting. Every time that I went over to the UK, Kenny, I said, oh boy, I'm going to have a lovely breakfast. I'm going to have a stack of pancakes, or I'm going to have some French toast. Something
done correctly. Yeah, done correctly. French toast done correctly, but it's fucking hot.
I couldn't even find French toast. All they were was like, here's a suckling pig. Eat the whole fucking thing, including its eyeballs, you fucking fat fuck. This is what we eat for breakfast over here. And I said, fuck, I'm the fat one? You motherfuckers eating the head of a pig? Constantly. You and all of your meats? Good lord.
Speaking actually of America, right? So
fucking filet mignon for breakfast, who thought?
You and filet mignon, there's a sentence that doesn't go together. But like, so in America you have all these fast food joints, right? Which range from good to bad. You know, you get your classics. Yeah. Like a McDonald's or a KFC or a Pizza Hut. All the kind of standard bearers that will
the
be the
global stuff. Yeah.
You know, and you know, some people go, I hate them. The worst thing is the McDonald's snob, right? And you get these everywhere, all across the world, where they go, oh, I would never touch a quarter pounder, it's just not my thing.
Oh,
cue them at 3 a.m, shoveling it down like a fucking African child in a jungle that hasn't been fed for 3 weeks. You know that's what they're like. They don't eat quarter pounders, they rape quarter pounders. They're those people, right? But they make you feel bad because once in a while you want to have a quarter pounder with cheese. Fuck off. Anyway.
You can't do that. You can't talk out of two sides of your mouth, Kenny. You either eat the McDonald's and you enjoy it. Like, I can't eat the McDonald's, but whenever I could eat the McDonald's, I would gladly go for some McDonald's. If someone said, I will have some McDonald's, I would tag along. And once in a blue moon, I'm sure once every couple of years, I will eat McDonald's and be perfectly happy about it because it is on the upper echelon of your standard fast food.
And you know exactly what you're going to get. You know, because
yes.
Whenever I go to the States, one of my favorite things is you can get the double quarter pounder with cheese. Now, here's where America does things right and the UK doesn't. If you go into a McDonald's in the States, like say like a quarter pound. So back in the UK, we would say like, oh, can I have a quarter pounder meal, please? Which is the meal with the drink and the fries. But in America, you're like, can I have a number 7? You know, and then you, this number fiasco, don't even get me started on that. But like, so,
well, in all honesty, Kenny, I think one of the reasons that they did that is you have a bunch of people, and you can say this is for better or for worse. I think it's great because I love cultural diversity, but there's a lot of people in the States taking these minimum wage jobs at fast food restaurants whose English is not their first language. And same thing with the Chinese restaurants here as well. So, you know, you have a lot of Asian people who work in Chinese and Japanese restaurants who they know the numbers system. So, you know, you just go, yeah, I want a 7. And then they mark it down as to where, you know, the whole lingo of various food items they may not know as well. So that is one line of thinking behind the numbers system in America.
Well, that happened to me the first time I ever went to the States, 2003, when I went over to Seattle for WrestleMania 19. I asked a woman for a Big Mac meal, and she looked at me like I'd just masturbated on her face. Like,
yeah,
she,
yeah, yeah.
Like, no clue.
How did you enjoy Seattle as a city, by the way?
Do you know what? I think I was too young.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I didn't, because when I went there, I didn't really go anywhere. I just went to the wrestling shows and to the hotel. So I didn't really explore, which I wish I had more. So I went to Seattle last year, no, 2 years ago when I was in Vancouver, but, I would love to go back. I do like it.
Yeah. A beautiful region of our country.
Anywhere
yes.
That's a fictional home of Frasier is a friend to me.
Sure.
But so you know, you got these in the States. You if you go and buy a quarter pounder meal or whatever, you can buy like a single quarter pounder meal for like, I don't know, like $7.89 or whatever it is. But then you can go double and get a double quarter pounder with cheese meal for like $8.40. So it's only like an extra 70 cents or something to get that second patty to get the double quarter pounder. I live for the double quarter pounder, ladies and gentlemen, which I don't really live for anymore because I have a personal trainer and he's basically my conscience for the week. So when I go and get weighed and he just looks at me like I'm a pig, I'm like, I'm sorry, I had a McDonald's at 2 a.m. I was stressed. I was booking a tour. Sean wouldn't phone me back. Anyway, there was things that went on, right? Sean did phone me back. It's fine. Don't be stressing, folks. It's fine. But over here, right, you can't do the double thing unless... So see if a, so a double quarter pounder meal in the UK is like £4, £4.99 or £4.89 or something like that.
Sure.
If you want the double patty, now you just want that patty, right? That's all you want.
Sure. You That's need it. To, nothing you, more, nothing
you
less.
You need to pay for 2 quarter pounders.
So basically you should just order the 2 quarter pounders instead.
No, but
like,
no.
What
but,
would even be the purpose?
But no, but that doesn't make any sense. Why am I paying double when in America I can get it for 40 cents extra?
Huh?
Fucking...
No, I hear you loud and clear, Kenny. Hey, I worry for your health.
I know, but what a way to... Do you know what? I'd rather die at 50 after having a good quarter pounder than die at 75 eating lettuce. I just have no interest. I know I need to eat a bit... Anyway, I'm not going to insist. This isn't an intervention. But the thing I was going to say was... So the thing that's sweeping the nation here in the UK is the... We were talking about all the... I've got fucking ADHD or something. You know, so we're talking about all the fast food chains and all these different ones, and they're good to bad. I want to give a shout out to what I think is the worst. Now, you might be able to top this for me because obviously I've not been to all of the fast food places in America.
I know clearly what the worst is, but yeah, we can.
The one that I would say is the worst, and the reason I say it's the worst is because A, I don't think it tastes good. B, they try and do everything, which is always a telltale sign for error. And C, the aftermath in the toilets is like Bosnia. Do you know what I mean? Like it's just not good. Is, of course, Jack in the Box. That would be my suggestion. So,
Kenny, we're in agreement. It is Jack in the Box.
Excellent.
Jack in the Box is the worst fast food restaurant.
Regale me with stories. Why? Explain to people why Jack in the... Explain what it is, what they do, and why it's the worst.
Everything,
by the way, you are listening to the Raw Rundown, where you want us to talk about the big main event angle leading into Survivor Series. We will get to it, but for now, Jack in the Box.
Jack in the Box. My good friend once described Jack in the Box, their tacos in particular. He said it's like he was eating one and he was just looking disgusted. And I said, "Why are you eating that?" And he just goes, "It's like they took 2 napkins and put a little bit of cat food in it and then squished it together. That's a Jack in the Box taco. 2 napkins with wet cat food just slapped in the middle of it." And that's essentially like the perfect way to sum up a lot of the food at Jack in the Box. They take everything that you, like for instance, if you get a sourdough burger, I know because my buddy was a manager at Jack in the Box for like 3 years. They take like the sourdough burger. They take the sourdough bun and they literally dip it in butter. There's like a trough of butter and they just submerge the sourdough bun, which absorbs everything because it's sourdough bread, you know? And then they plop that on a like patty that's sort of deep fried-ish. Because basically they take like the grease trap and just pour it over the meat after they slab it onto your buttery bun. It's disgusting. That's the way that everything tastes there. You get some tater tots and they just drizzle grease all over everything, like even more than needed. It's so disgusting. I went to a pizza place in San Francisco and they take extra grease and pour it all over the pizza. And I'm like, why the fuck would you do that? What are you doing? And I feel like Jack in the Box does that with everything that they serve. And they do offer everything under the moon, Kenny. And that is kind of a telltale sign that you're at a bad fast food restaurant in my summation.
All I remember is when I went to, like, because on the surface, Jack in the Box looks like a good place. Because you're like, oh, they do, like, breakfast snacks. They do burgers. They do tacos. You know, anything you want is here. It's just like, so I, as a counter,
all of it tastes the same. That's the shocking thing. Their burger tastes the same as their fucking potato wedges.
Exactly the same. The problem is that, like, so when I went to the Waffle House with Cornette this year and I was like dreading it, I was like, oh god, it's going to be the worst. I love Waffle House. I'm desperate to go to another one. I'm trying to find out how
Waffle House is good stuff. Yeah.
I'm trying to find out how far there's one from New Orleans to go on a pilgrimage to get a Waffle House, you know.
But, I loved going to Waffle House at like 2 a.m. and getting an omelet with ham and cheese. Delicious. Get the smothered and covered and peppered hash browns. Get some cheese and some jalapenos over those. Oh, so good, Kenny. So good.
Now, so here is, I mean, I'm on their website right now. They do burgers, right? And, you know, like the All-American Ribeye. You know what the All-American Ribeye is? A turd and cum in a bun. That's what that is. There's no beef in that.
Who would order the All-American Ribeye?
From them, right?
Yeah, or there's right.
The classic Buttery Jack, you know, which should have an asterisk saying diarrhea included. But, you know, that's there. And then it goes, it's just, oh, there's the sourdough jack. It looks horrendous. Anyway, but what I was going to say before we move into talking about the wrestling is the news that is sweeping the nation is that Taco Bell have officially launched? Yeah, there are now Taco Bells in the UK.
I never knew that you guys didn't have a Taco Bell. That's so strange to me.
Now, I need to ask you as an American who has, because Corey, who's our tech guy at Inside the Ropes, he just loves America, like, to the point where he wants to move to America, and
nauseatingly.
Disgustingly so. To the point where, like,
he should come over here and we could swap healthcare policies.
I've said to him so many times, I'm like, do you realize how fucked the healthcare is? And he's like, oh, I'll be fine. I'm like, yeah, it's fine now.
I thought I was fine too until a year ago. Fuck.
Now, I've got a thing about Taco. Can I share this? Do you think this is okay to share in the podcast?
I mean, you've said the word rape twice, and we've sit here.
I didn't say it twice, did I?
I think so.
I said it about the McDonald's snobs. What was the other one?
I can't recall.
Maybe
you know. You're using your Jedi mind tricks on me. And then we've sat here and we've talked about digesting grease to where it will clog our arteries and kill us at the age of 50. So I would say that you can share just about anything on this podcast at this point, Kenny.
Okay, good. So the thing with Taco Bell for me is like the one-night stand that you wish you hadn't had but you kind of still think about. You know,
yeah,
you're like,
yeah,
oh, that
yeah.
was terrible. And you go, yeah, but that bit was really... Anyway, so that's what Taco Bell is like, because I go to Taco Bell and Taco Bell is at its optimum level when you're drunk, without question. Like, it's not a sobering place that I would really want to go. But if I've had a drink, yeah. I'm all about it. Give me as many shredded chicken mini quesadillas as my mouth can fit.
Sure.
However... So what I found is I go there and I have the Taco Bell and I enjoy the Taco Bell and I'm like, oh, that was really good. Every time, I've had it about maybe 5 times in my life. Every time, within 30 minutes, I have the most violent shits of my life. Every single time. This is not like a...
Clearly you've never ate at White Castle. Is basically what I'm hearing.
I have. I also had the shits from White Castle. Hold on, go into that. What I can't wait for is there's a place in New Orleans I'm going to take you to, and it's just it's right at the kind of entry point on Bourbon Street, and it's called Crystal Burgers with a K.
Oh, the Crystal Burgers!
And it makes White Castle look like filet mignon. It's so bad.
No. My wife works for White Castle as a company. And she has heard horror stories about the old Crystal Burgers over the years.
Oh my god! So my point is, Taco Bell. Every time I get the shits, can you clear it up on the podcast for people in the UK who might be going to try it? Taco Bell, does it give you the shits? Is it good? What is your verdict on Taco Bell?
Kenny, I've always had a stomach of steel. I can drink hot sauce. I can eat the hottest peppers on the planet. I can eat greasy food, I can eat healthy food, and my shit stays the same regardless. The only time I've ever gotten sick from any fast food was a Sonic drive-in, and I got food poisoning from it because they didn't know how to cook food. So for my personal experience, this steel trap of a gut that I have, I've never gotten sick on Taco Bell. Never had anything abnormal come out of the back end or front end of me, for that matter, from Taco Bell. It's a lovely experience that I can no longer have anymore. But I would recommend it if you are impaired in some way, be it from hallucinogens or from the old alcohol.
There you go. I also read yesterday that Taco Bell are starting a new quesadilla filled with Kit Kats. Called
it's a dessert. Yeah, it's a dessert quesadilla, from what I gather, and it has like chocolate sauce instead of cheese and everything. Don't get too grossed out, you guys. It's not like it's cheese and meat and Kit Kats. It's a dessert thing. It's like a Choco Taco, if you will.
What I will say, I've just went on to Taco Bell's UK website, and they've got something here that looks tremendous. It's called the Big Bell Box, which apparently gives you a fajita burrito, a crunchy taco, Mexican fries, two churros, and a drink.
You can't go wrong with the old churro from Taco Bell. It's hard to go wrong there.
Now, if you're in the UK and you want to know where you can go to get your own Taco Bell, I'm just going to read out the locations to you. They're everywhere. You can get them in Essex. You can get them in Manchester, Sheffield, Barnsley, Bradford, Nottingham, Colchester, Southampton, Rotherham, Poole.
What about Liverpool?
No, they've got one in Leeds, but not Liverpool. They are apparently bringing Taco Bell to Glasgow, though. So,
nice. What about our friends in Wales?
Okay, hold on. Let me see.
I like that you laughed at that. That's terrible. It's terrible. Our poor Mike Mears is from Wales, right?
He is, but even he would tell you it's not by choice. It's not his fault. He was born into it.
I loved Cardiff. It was a lovely city.
Do you know the thing?
You're being too harsh.
The thing about Cardiff is like, so I have numerous friends, including Mike, who stays in Cardiff. Cardiff is like where all of the generic chains went to die. So like, there's a Premier Inn, or in America you call it a Premier Inn. There's a Jumping Jacks nightclub, which if you want fingered, go to Jumpin' Jacks.
I haven't done that in a while. So.
There's like McDonald's. It's like the chain place. It's like all just chain places. But if you go into the suburb area of Cardiff, it's good. But the problem for me is that every time we announce a tour or a show, anytime, there's like this small Welsh stronghold of people that get really bitchy about the fact that we have not run Cardiff.
I've noticed, but there's lovely people there, Kenny. They are not the sum of the parts of Wales. There's lovely Welsh people.
As far as I know, there's no Taco Bell in Wales yet. But you know, maybe there'll be one soon.
Our Welsh listeners don't need Taco Bell. You know why, Kenny? Because they are sustained with my love of Wales.
Oh, for fuck's sake. You can't have a taco, but David likes Wales. Great. What a fucking consolation. There is a Taco Bell in North Wales, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Well, if you are in North Wales, Pennsylvania, I hope that's not too close to Pittsburgh. Shout out. You might fall asleep at a wrestling show.
Shout out to all of our friends in North Wales, Pennsylvania. I hear we're very popular in that market.
We are. Why aren't you touring in North Wales, Pennsylvania, Kenny? You fuck.
Couldn't I start with New York or something if we're doing America? Yeah, we're kicking off. It's like when you know like a band haven't really made it yet. They're like, we're starting off our UK tour in Rotherham. You're like, why? Go somewhere. Go to like London. Go to a big place. Anyway, I also wanted to give a quick shout out to Dan Jackson, one of our lovely listeners, who just purchased his Inside the Ropes T-shirt, and he couldn't believe the comfort level. He practically sat down to have a wank as soon as he put it on. He was so comfortable. But he's been putting over how comfortable as Jamie Domican was also wearing his T-shirt, showing how comfortable it was. Di Owen got his recently. Ollie Clark's got his. Everybody's got an Inside the Ropes T-shirt, and you can get one too. So just head over to insidetheropes.co.uk and pick up your shirt. That's the plug for that. Also, before we start...
Are we going to start calling people like Bruce Pritchard and Tony Schiavone?
I mean, if I don't have the technical capabilities to take the spikes of my voice out, how the fuck do you think I'm going to add live calling into this? I do want to say before we start talking about Raw, which there is a lot to talk about, good and bad, so we're going to get into it here in a second. Again... I genuinely, I'm not trying to be like pluggy or shilly, but I can't believe how many patrons we have on Inside the Ropes now. We now are up to 577 patrons for Inside the Ropes.
It feels like we just hit 500.
We did last month.
Wow. You guys, we truly do love you. We truly do appreciate you. And we're doing all we can to make you guys feel like you are getting the most bang for your buck.
100%. And speaking of which, tonight you are going to get the Shawn Michaels interview on Patreon if you head over there. That'll be at the $3 level. Tomorrow is an exclusive Wrestle Talk Magazine preview podcast with me and James Dixon. And I'm going to ask him why he's not writing for What Culture Wrestling anymore. I'm going to ask that question. We're going to talk about it. We both used to work there. Only knows what's going to be said in that conversation, but we will be talking on Patreon. Go check it out. And then later on, David has something up his sleeve, which I'm not going to say anything about, but David has something up his sleeve that he's told me that needs to go onto the Patreon, so I guess we'll see what becomes of that.
It's going to be good. You can follow me on Twitter, at Zoopsoul, Zoopsoul, for a few hints.
And finally, the important one, and people have been raving about it already to us, are TLC 2017 pay-per-view reviews over there on Patreon. 1 hour and 57 minutes long. We dissect the entire pay-per-view. We talk about the event in Chile. We run through some of David's experiences at his St. Louis house show he went to. We also talk about a number of topics which I don't really think we should ever be talking about in the main feed. Savio Vega's brought up, much to my chagrin. I think I also brought him up, which is probably even more problematic. But we go through everything. We talk about, you know, Asuka's debut. What do we think of it? The pros and cons. We talk about Finn Balor's match with AJ Styles, and you know how they did. And then we break down the whole main event: Kurt Angle's return, how Kurt was as a replacement for Roman, what were the good spots in the match, what were the bad, who was our MVPs of the match, tons and tons of stuff. You can get that for the $3 level over at patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. So please go over there and check it out if you are so inclined.
Only $3, man. That is so cheap. That is just mind-bogglingly cheap.
And then if you want to, so you can do $3, you'll get the B pay-per-view reviews, so basically the non-big four. At the $3 level, you also get interviews. If you go up to the $5 level, you get that, plus you get the big four pay-per-view reviews, which are going to be added to that. So if you want to hear us talk about Survivor Series, me, Sandra, and David, I'm pretty sure it's probably about 2 hours long. Knowing us.
Oh yeah, easily.
Because when we get together, it's always a good time, and we don't get together enough. So we'll definitely be doing that on Patreon at the $5 level. The retro pay-per-view reviews are on there at the $5 level. Anybody who pledges a $50 podcast, that goes on at the $5 level. Some fun stuff coming up for Survivor Series from Retro Raw is going to be on there. Tons of stuff. So yeah, go over, check out. And then there's a $7 level for all NXT stuff. Takeover Reviews, a weekly NXT podcast with me and Sandra, and a classic ITR with Robert and I from 5 years ago. Every week we upload a new episode. So the latest one that went up is from obviously October 2012, where we interviewed Davey Richards. Well, Robert interviewed him and I didn't want to, and I said he had no banter and he was high on the phone, so I was right. But that's on there. So yeah, go check it out.
Go see what kind of a train wreck clusterfuck that is.
It is definitely one of those. But let's talk about Raw, David. The night after TLC, lots of people wondering what was going to happen, how they were going to handle situations. So we'll go through the show. I think that sometimes it's better when we're going to talk about angles that we basically keep stuff together. So like, when we talk about Shane and Kurt, we'll just tie that in with the main event. There's no point in us just talking about a backstage segment and then trying to not say more about it. So the show kicks off though with Kurt Angle coming out, and he basically sets up Survivor Series with the interpromotional matches. There's going to be champions versus champion, Alexa against Natalia, The Miz versus Baron Corbin, The Shield against the Usos, and Brock Lesnar against Jinder Mahal.
Oh, I love Jinder Mahal. What a wonderful guy. He's so much better than Jinder Mahal.
Of all the things that he could have gaffed on, I laughed so hard that he called him Jinder Mahal. It was so
I immediately thought of you whenever it happened. I was like, Kenny is just sitting there with the lube in his hand.
Oh, just so working excited. The shaft. It was so good.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Before we go on a little bit, I want to get your take on, what do you think of the idea, let's not talk about the specific people in the matches, But just the idea, they didn't do this last year, of doing champion versus champion as part of the sort of Raw versus SmackDown Survivor Series thing. For your personal preference, is that an addition or a subtraction from what they were doing last year of just doing the sort of like men's teams against each other, women's teams against each other, tag teams against each other? What do you think?
Oh, I love it. I think it's an excellent addition. I wish the champions were more interesting to me. I think that's a big issue with it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of over Alexa Bliss. Gasp. I'm definitely not feeling Natalya.
I don't want to. I think one of the things that's intriguing about the main event with Lesnar and Mahal is, even though, you know, most people don't buy Mahal in the match, there is an intrigue as to how they're going to present it, right? And especially if they have a guest referee that's quite interesting. I almost feel like with that, whether you like the pairing of them or not, there's still an intrigue of watching what they're going to do. But what I think.
Yeah, of course.
What I think's. No, it's not bad. Like, so, I mean, the Shield and... So now let's talk about the matches. So we've got the Shield against the Usos. That's going to be fucking great, right? That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. There is no doubt in my mind. That will steal the entirety of the show.
That could be the tag team.
You're only going to watch one match for a wrestling standpoint. That's the one.
I mean, that could legitimately have contention to be match of the year in WWE. It could be that good.
Yeah. No, it will end up being incredibly, incredibly good.
But the two matches that I think are the problem, and I don't even think Brock and Jinder's the problem, because I actually like the idea of the two world champions facing off. So, if for 1 year we have to have Jinder be involved, fair enough. You know, at least we can look forward to whoever they're going to be next year. But I think that the problem with the women's match and the USIC match is that it's two heels on both rosters facing off against each other.
Yes. And I mean, if you really want to break it down, Brock is sort of in that weird bubble of, is he a heel, is he a face? But I mean, overall, he's portrayed as a heel more often than a face. So I would say that it's sort of like heel versus heel, heel versus heel, heel versus heel. This is very heel-heavy, man. Unlike Vince McMahon, actually.
Yeah, he doesn't really like to. I think that you can get away with the Lesnar thing, because I feel like they are trying to position Lesnar as... The thing that's weird with Lesnar is he can be babyface or heel depending who he's wrestling.
But with
the Miz and Corbin and Alexa and Natalya, it's just... It's very clearly heel, 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 heel. Like, there's no gray area to it. So, my question to you... Do you think that any of the four championships, Raw Women, SmackDown Women, IC or US, do you think any of them are going to change hands before Survivor Series, which would lead to one of these matches changing? Is that a possibility?
I think that is definitely a possibility, yes. Yeah, no doubt in my mind. In fact, I have a feeling that either Baron Corbin or The Miz will no longer have that title whenever the time rolls around. In particular, that is the matchup that I think is going to change.
So, but yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, so I watched the 2016 Survivor Series back 2 days ago, and I actually loved it. Loved watching it back again. I actually loved it so much that I went back and watched the Go Home Raw final segment. Do you remember that segment where it was like the five guys from each brand facing off, and then like Jericho put AJ Styles and his haircut on the list, and then Jericho looked at Ellsworth and he was like, what the hell is that, you know? And it was so good.
Oh god, so good.
And you had like Bray and Braun facing off. Like, it was really good stuff. So I'm all aboard that kind of brand versus brand stuff. It works for me because you don't get to see it any other time of the year. And I do think that these matches with the champion versus champion make sense, but when we talk about the main event segment, I think there's a way they can make it better and more intriguing than they have so far. But so anyway, Kurt Angle runs down the card for Survivor Series, and then as he's talking about how Raw is going to be dominant, The Miz comes out with Sheamus, Cesaro, and Curtis Axel. He complains about Kurt Angle being in the match at TLC. The four heels sort of surround Kurt Angle, and then as I guess they're about to pounce on him, the Shield's music hits. Rollins and Ambrose come down through the crowd. They join Kurt Angle there, and then Kurt Angle decides to say that, well, it's going to be Miz, Cesaro, and Sheamus in a six-man tag against Rollins, Ambrose, and a partner who's decided to stay an extra night. It's AJ Styles. Michael Cole makes sure to say that you know, AJ Styles must have been, you know, the favor from Angle to, from Shane to Angle must have been, you can have him for one more night as well. You can have him for Raw. So I like that they covered that at least a little bit on commentary at that point.
Yeah.
Rather than just being like, here's AJ. So that led us into AJ, Seth and Dean against Sheamus, Cesaro and Miz. They go about 20 minutes. It's just a very high octane match. A lot of good performers in it. A lot of good near falls and good wrestling. I really enjoyed this match.
Sorry about that. Taking a drink. I will say, this match had one of my favorite bumps of the year in any continent for any promotion. And that was the spike DDT that The Miz gave to Seth Rollins in the middle of the match. Rollins sold that, man. He, like, jumped up and flipped over, and he was like a dead guy, just ragdolled completely on that. And it just, it really made me smile. This entire thing was very well done. I like that AJ got not one, but two hot tags. I thought that was really cool. AJ getting the win here over formidable foes gives him a little bit of steam back from the loss the night before. I was big on that. Really enjoyed that. It did a very good job of filling time early on in the show. One of the better Raw, weird hodgepodge tag matches of the year, I would say. Maybe even one of the better matches on Raw this year.
It kind of reminded me of when we used to get those Shield six-man tags, like, every week.
Yeah,
and
right,
you, and
right,
you could
right.
constantly
yeah.
have them. So, yeah, I thought AJ worked. What really, like, stuck out to me when I was watching this match was, like, Vince McMahon must have so much trust in AJ Styles. Because if you think about it, when Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt go down, now Bray Wyatt is someone that Vince protects, books him terribly, but protects him, and then Roman Reigns is his guy, and when those two guys go out, arguably the real person that he drafted in was AJ Styles. Yes. Kurt Angle did the main event, but AJ Styles was the one to do the Finn Balor match, which really, you know, gave the show some life. And then he was here to do this six-man tag to basically take the place of Roman. So I just kind of walked away from this really happy that, like, AJ Styles is not just a guy in WWE. He's one of the top guys that makes such a difference that he can come over and do these two nights and kind of make the show feel like it hadn't lost a beat.
Yeah, in kind of a way, it's very strange, and I may be a little biased because you know how much I love the Hitman. But AJ Styles reminds me a lot of Bret Hart in terms of his role in the company. Would you agree with that?
Like, yeah, that's a good
1992, 1993 Bret Hart. That's kind of the vibe I get.
He's never going to be the guy, but he's always going to be one of the top guys.
Exactly. And he's probably getting some of the loudest cheers out of anybody on the roster.
Yeah, and I actually think that AJ being in this match and this whole thing happening actually added some intrigue as to what happened in the main event. One of my big intrigue points is AJ Styles.
Because
it almost feels like he was shafting them here. You know,
yeah,
he was,
no. It was the inside job.
Yeah, he was the man on the inside. So the match finishes, really great match. Now so this is obviously, you know.
Also, the fact that he was there performing for a couple of nights before everything went down, it kind of wraps up that storyline of why did they allow AJ to perform on Raw. It's he was getting intel, brothers.
Yeah, and what I think also adds to the cold, you know, the SmackDown thing that we will get to in the main event is that, again, Raw benefits from SmackDown, which seems to be a continual thing.
Yeah.
Which to me is why, like, what's interesting to me is a lot of people seem to be very shocked by the main event and the fact that SmackDown suddenly wanted to take out Raw, and I'm like, to me it's very obvious why they want to. Like, I'm just like, if I was on SmackDown, I'd be like, yeah, let's fuck those guys up. 100%.
Yeah, the underdogs. Perennial underdogs.
Now, this took us, like, 35, almost 40 minutes into the show, so it was good, and then, you know, AJ, Seth, and Dean have won, like you said. AJ hit the phenomenal forearm on Cesaro, got the win, and right after the match, Kane comes out. He ends up getting the best of Rollins, Ambrose, and Styles, manhandles them, And then he delivers a promo where he talks about, you know, he'd heard the stories through Hellfire and Brimstone about Braun Strowman and the fact that he'd, you know, walked away from an ambulance crash, destroyed the Big Show, broken Roman Reigns multiple times. He liked what he heard, but what he found with Braun Strowman was trash. And he put him in there where he belonged, in the back of a garbage truck, and Kane said that he is and always will be Raw's only monster. excuse me. And Kane said that with Braun Strowman gone, he wants competition or else. Before we get to what happens next, what did you think of this as a kind of Kane explanation, I guess, for why he came back?
Oh, I loved it. It made all the sense in the world. It was great. Val was going through all of the monsters that he should try to seek out next. You know, you've got Frankenstein's monster, of course, you know. But yeah, it's kind of funny though. Whenever you think about it, the idea of Kane going and seeking out Lady Gaga and putting her through.
Oh God! I would pay so much money to see. Like, I would literally put the Universal title on Kane if he can get Lady Gaga to manage him. I'd be so in. And then what they'd have to do is have Kane appear in a music video.
Like, you'd have to, otherwise it wouldn't make sense. I mean, come on, this makes sense, this makes perfect sense.
Do you know what, Glenn Jacobs might be the best all-round performer I've ever seen, because if you look at it, right, he's been a Christmas creature, he's been a parody act, he has been a dentist, he has been a bad younger brother, he has, you know, necrophilia, we'll not go there. He's been an insurance salesman, he's running for office.
Yeah.
What can the guy not do?
I mean, he's done a myriad of gimmicks, Kenny, to say the least.
I really like the idea that, because, you know, the thing was, when Kane came out last week, it was kind of like, why is he back? Why is he, and one of the things that somebody had said to me that I found interesting about, you know, why was Kane still in the match on Sunday if Roman was gone? It was, well, he was there because he wanted to take out the Shield.
Yeah.
So if two of the three members of the Shield are there, and in theory the strongest member of the Shield is gone, would he not want to pounce on that and make sure that he can?
Yeah, I mean, you would think.
And then I like the idea that, you know, he heard things about Braun Strowman and he thought, oh, I want to meet this guy, I want to be in his team. And then he sees him and all hell breaks loose and they fall apart. And then now he's wants to get rid of Strowman. To me, it makes sense within the story.
It makes perfect sense to me. They lined it up perfectly, I thought. Yeah,
and I
am, no doubt.
I really want to see Braun Strowman versus Kane. Like, I'm all in for it. Just give me it. I want it. Braun Strowman and Kane.
I feel you 100%. It was something I never knew that I wanted until I saw it. And then I was like, no, I want that. That's something that I need.
But that's like, I would have never known that I wanted multiple Raw main events with Big Show and Braun. But they were great.
Yeah, exactly. I think, honestly, it's kind of, it goes to show what a miracle worker that Braun is.
Yeah, he definitely can get the best out of it. Do you know, it actually makes me think that maybe Braun and The Undertaker would have been a good idea. Because when he works with older babyface monsters, he just knows what to do with them for some reason. And I don't think there's been anybody who's really known what to do with people like that ever.
He has like this innate instinct within him that draws out the best in the performers that he's in there with. For whatever reason, I don't know, but he has it.
And all I'm saying is, if they want to give Goldberg a call and say, listen, you want to come do Braun at WrestleMania? Please, please, please. Like, let's do Goldberg and Braun, and let's just see them batter the shit out of each other. I don't care if it's just 5 minutes. Because this year I had a great 5 minutes with Goldberg and Lesnar. I was like, yeah, just two guys beating the shit out of each other for 5 minutes. I'm all in. Now that I've said all the positive stuff about it, so Kane says he wants some competition. And I think we all know that this meant Kane was getting a win by defeating somebody on the Raw roster, so that's fine. Yeah. Cue my surprise to hear Finn Balor's music. And he comes out, and so you know that, like, out of us, you're more of a pessimist and I'm more of an optimist, for the most part, right? That's our roles.
That tends to be our dynamic.
But I tweeted it, I was like, I don't understand the mindset of having Kane squash Finn Balor. Now, squash might have been a strong term, but when I was getting, you know, so I just want to read some of the replies, actually, that I was getting, because there was a lot of people kind of disagreeing with me, and usually I'm the first to try and be positive, but I'm just like, I just don't think that this is a good idea. But some of the questions that people were sort of saying to me was, so let me try and get some of them here. Mark said, what heat did Balor really lose after the AJ win? He's still a net gain. Kane is being brought back as a monster and a legend. So let me read a few more before we talk about it. He also goes on to say, Finn can afford a few losses when he's the smallest upper card guy on Raw and has the Demon as a fallback. I think the fact that it's a fallback's a problem. Dre Warner kind of backs us up saying, you could have had any number of guys take that from Kane. No logical reason it was Finn. Harry says, the old man Balor had to put over young and upcoming talent. Adam said, how to make the AJ match pointless in less than 24 hours.
Yes!
There was one that I really wanted to read out because So Edward had said, it doesn't hurt Balor right now. We should worry more about what happens to him after Survivor Series. Adam Porter does bring up a good point where he said, you know, it did take 3 choke slams to beat him, and that was fair. Gives Kane a push as he heads into the match with Braun, and Balor doesn't really lose much. Jay said that because Kane is a demon and Balor just a human, cue the rematch demon versus demon to show how powerful the demon is. And then there's one more. I'm stalling for time here to try and find this. sorry. But there was one that I was just like, what? So, and then Steve says, jobbing's a bit harsh. It did take 3 choke slams to beat him. But my whole thing was, it didn't, like, I know Kane had to get a win. But for me, it's like Finn Balor just came off this match with AJ Styles where he defeated him. So I just don't understand the mindset of if he's just defeated. And it's not even like, see if this had been a competitive match where like Finn almost got the coup de grace and like in the end Kane was too much for him, I'd probably be okay with it. But that's not the story they told us. They told us the story of Finn Balor is not in Kane's league.
Yes.
And that's all there is to it. Now, the thing that I'd wanted to talk about, the tweet that I wanted to reply to, was Ben, who had written, it took 3 choke slams to keep Balor down, it's a finish that makes sense, keeps Balor strong too, and Balor had a lot of offense. I said I disagree and that Kane could have beaten anyone, and Ben just kind of said, you know, let's just agree to disagree. But for me, so what he said there was interesting. He said, it's a finish that makes sense and it keeps Balor strong too. I understand the Kane thing, of, you know, you're doing this to build him with Braun. But can you understand what people are meaning by the fact that they think that Balor comes out of this looking strong? Because I just don't see it.
No, I don't see it either. Kane's been on the shelf. He's been campaigning. A lot of people know about that. They've made mention of it on television before. He's not in wrestling shape, et cetera, et cetera. He comes back and fights a guy that has been fighting every night in Kane's absence. And puts him away on night one. The last time that we saw Kane before he returned, he was losing very quickly in a dismissive fashion. This hurt Balor. And it, by proxy, it hurt AJ Styles. Because the guy who ended up losing to Balor 24 hours prior to this ended up getting disposed of by a guy who is practically 20 years his senior. So this is problematic. And a lot of people say, well, let's see where he is after Survivor Series. The problem is, this is setting the pace for where he is to go after Survivor Series. The idea that the demon is his fallback, that is a crutch more than anything. Because that means that in the WWE's mind and in Vince's mind, he is going to be quote-unquote bulletproof. Just like Cesaro and everyone else that we like who loses constantly because he thinks that he can take as many losses as possible but still have that out to where he can still win and it will not matter ultimately. This is problematic because how many non-demon wins will we see Finn Balor actually pick up? It's going to become the type of Bray Wyatt crutch where we see Finn Balor come in without the face paint on, and we'll immediately write him off and go, well, I can tune out mentally because he doesn't have the face paint on, therefore he's losing the match. So I don't have to pay attention. I don't have to emotionally invest in this match because I'm already aware of what the outcome is going to be based on the analytics and the numbers that support it. So I very feverishly disagree that this was a finish that made Balor look strong. I think that you could have put any number of people in there against Kane.
Matt Hardy.
Matt Hardy would have been the exact one that I was going to bring up, and it would have put Matt on TV and given him something to do. So, yeah, I completely and entirely agree. Also, shouldn't we be saving these Kane and Finn Balor matchups for after Kane puts over Braun Strowman? Because that could have been a fun program, I would have thought. The Demon versus the Demon? Are you kidding me?
See, if you didn't have the AJ Finn thing. If Finn had beaten Bray Wyatt last night at TLC, I wouldn't have had a problem with this. Because what you're doing there is building towards Finn Balor and Kane, Demon versus Demon. The issue is that what I thought we were getting was I thought that Finn Balor beating AJ Styles was indicative of them going in the direction of Finn Balor being the Royal Rumble challenger for Brock Lesnar. That is not happening anymore.
No.
Because
no.
It was already a tough sell. It's now an impossible sell. Because I was thinking, so I was trying to justify things in my head, right? And I was going, okay, when Braun Strowman lost to Brock Lesnar, I can justify part of it in my head. Maybe that's just because I want to, right? So there's no, there's, but in my head I can go, do you know what? Braun Strowman being pinned by an F5 doesn't actually take away how tough Braun Strowman is. Because Braun Strowman got up 10 seconds later. Just like Braun Strowman always gets, so he can always get up. But the problem with Finn Balor is not at a point where you take him seriously against Brock Lesnar to begin with.
Yeah.
And then you have Kane, who's kind of like, I mean, I know we're building him for Braun, but Kane was so easily able to dispose of Finn Balor. It wasn't even a contest. And to me, this just looked like a massacre. So I think that what they'll do is post, so if they do Braun and Kane at Survivor Series, you know, I think Finn the Demon and Kane the Demon could headline a Raw in December, and it'll be good. It'll be good fun, and you'll get a win, and people will like it again, and that's fine. I'm just saying that there's a difference between Finn Balor, the upper mid-card guy, who is good, compared to the guy we want to push in a Brock Lesnar match with a chance that he might beat him for the title. They're two very different things.
This is indicative of the direction that the company is going. Now is the time that you start planting the seeds for the Royal Rumble, not later. And if there's any indication about the past Royal Rumbles, we should not get our hopes up because it will be Roman Reigns coming in to win it all this year.
Yeah, somebody had a great idea, and it's not going to happen, but I love the idea. Like, so if they're going to do Roman and Brock in some form anyway, right, which will be a good match because those two guys would be incapable of having a bad match. I love the idea of, like, Brock versus the whole Shield in a four-way. Because that, to me, opens up more possibilities. It'd be more interesting. And, you know, you could have one of the Shield turn and all this. There's loads of stuff they could do, but I hope that for Roman's sake as well, I don't think you need to give Roman the Rumble. Roman can get to Lesnar without the Rumble.
Oh, you don't need to, but he's going to.
And I think that that's going to be the detriment of him, because I think if he kind of got there organically, people would be more into it than they would with him winning the run. But then, you know, I guess we'll see. If it's not Roman, it's kind of too soon to tell what they're doing at WrestleMania for the WWE title. It could be Cena and Mahal, it could be Cena and Undertaker, it could be AJ Nakamura. There's all these different ways it could go. But one way we can confirm it's not going is Finn Balor in the world title picture anytime soon.
Yeah, no, they put the kibosh on that, and that is ultimately, you guys, for those of you who didn't see it and didn't understand it, that is ultimately why it is bad for Finn Balor, because this is the direction that he is headed now, and it's not up, it's just straight in the middle. get ready for that 50-50 booking for the next 6 months.
Yeah, the thing with Balor is I've always thought, oh, it'd be great to see a Balor demon entrance at WrestleMania. And there just doesn't seem that there would be an opponent for him, you know? It just doesn't seem like... I mean, maybe like The Miz for the IC title or something, but...
Yeah.
There just doesn't seem to be anything there that's exciting at the moment. Anyway, we'll talk about the Kurt Angle, Shane McMahon thing towards the end. We get Asuka debuting on Raw against Emma. She beats her in about half the time here, 5 minutes rather than 9. I did enjoy the finish where Emma tries a roll up, but Asuka kicks out and then puts it straight into the Asuka lock for the win. So, better in the sense that it didn't take it as long this time, but still not a hot program. I think they need to ditch this whole Asuka Emma thing and just kind of, you know, just let her kill some jobbers or something.
Yeah, this really sucks, man, because they're just going to toil around with Asuka and a lower mid-card performer in Emma exactly the way that they did with Nakamura and Dolph Ziggler. And it's so frustrating to me. And the fact that, hey, look, this was a great match, too. I really enjoyed this. I'm happy that Emma gets to showcase that she's actually a good wrestler. So don't take anything away from Emma. But the problem is we're talking about Emma instead of Asuka coming out of Asuka's debut, Kenny. That's the problem. We're not even talking about Asuka.
The issue that I've been trying to think about how to word this today, the issue is the narrative of the WWE Raw Women's Division, because the Raw Women's Division is so lopsided because you have Sasha, Bayley, Alexa, and Nia, who are the four that you take seriously.
Yeah.
And can be in title programs, and everyone else is kind of interchangeable.
Yeah.
Whether it's Mickey James, Alicia Fox, Emma, or whatever. And the thing is, Mickey James, Alicia Fox, and Emma are all good wrestlers. But you can't just... If those performers every week are not ones that you're used to seeing do much, then it's hard to all of a sudden be like, oh, yeah, they might be... Ask it. Like, I'm more of a story... wrestling fan than an in-ring wrestling fan. There are exceptions, obviously, like Finn and AJ, but I love both the characters. But
of
like,
course.
With Asuka and Emma, I'm just in my head going, oh, I just don't buy it. I feel like Asuka is just taking her time, and there's no danger, and I don't really understand why we're spending our time on it. And yeah, the Nakamura Ziggler example is perfect. They need to realize that, like, when somebody comes up in the main roster, don't put them in a feud with somebody who is stale.
Yeah.
Because it just makes them stay by default.
Without question. It's like, as a one-off, it's perfectly fine. But as a feud, are we really going down this route again? Like, how many times, you know, Insanity is walking into the same door constantly and not realizing that you got to open it to walk through it. And right now, they're looking a little cuckoo, Kenny. So frustrating.
Yep, it is frustrating. The thing is, cause I actually think there's a lot of good stuff going on right now, leading into Survivor Series, but this is just not one of the things. But I'm...
And it needs to be, it should be.
What I will give them credit for is Asuka should have been in no way involved in that end segment, and they didn't involve her. That was good. I'll give them that. She should in no way have been disposed of by those SmackDown women. Save that for...
Or if they were going to do it, all the SmackDown women walk up to her and she just looks crazy-eyed and they walk away.
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That would have actually been better than what they did.
Yeah, that would have been good. Alexa Bliss comes out with a Raw Women's title. She does a promo about, you know, she's going to be facing Natalya. the performance of her career at TLC. I mean, if that was the performance of your career, then maybe just hand in your notice, love. So she, you know, I liked that she brought the whole, you know, Finn Balor and AJ Styles just stared into each other's eyes for 10 minutes and you chant, this is awesome. She's got her character down, like, in terms of her insults and stuff. Really, really good. But then, she wants the fans to chant, you deserve it. They aren't doing it. And then Mickey James comes out, gives it a great DDT. I mean, how she gave it a DDT like that and those fucking heels, I will never know in my life. But good job by Mickey, and then Mickey stands over and says, Alexa, you do deserve it, which I assume means they're going to have another TV match before Survivor Series. But, I'm kind of with you, like, I like Alexa Bliss. Like, I do like her, but I think that my issue is that, like, I don't really think that she is good enough to be the final destination for people to get to.
It would really, I mentioned it on Twitter where I said, it's going to break my heart in a couple of months whenever Asuka loses clean to Alexa Bliss for the title. And because I really feel like that's how Vince and the company values Alexa Bliss as the be-all, end-all female. And she's just not that good of a wrestler to be in that hierarchy there. She's just not. And she has the personality, and that's great. Personality, hey, it goes a long way in wrestling. I know that much. Look at Hulk Hogan. Look at the Ultimate Warrior. But it can only get you by so much, especially this early in the lifespan of the newly redecorated women's division in WWE, that rebranding that they've done. So I think putting someone who is considered a sex symbol front and center for the quote-unquote women's wrestling revolution, I think that that is a little problematic in itself. It's not Alexa's fault, of course, but what is her fault is the fact that she is a few steps behind women who are more deserving than she is in ring. And she can work on that, and she can get better, and she can achieve that. She can reach the pinnacle that, say, a Sasha or a Charlotte are currently at, or, of course, you know, Asuka. But until then, the idea of Asuka losing to Alexa Bliss, imagine that happening in NXT whenever they were both in NXT, Kenny. That's laughable.
Yeah, I mean, I think the positive to look at it is that it's much easier to, not much easier, I say like I've done it. I think it's easier for someone to develop skill in ring rather than develop personality. I mean, personality is harder to get. So the fact that she's got that is a good sign for her.
Sure.
She just needs to, but you know what? Maybe Asuka being there, you know, if we can get a sort of run of matches going with Asuka and Sasha, Bailey, and that kind of thing, maybe it'll force her to up her game, you know?
Yes.
That's the hope that that'll happen.
That is the hope. Yes.
I do just want to give a really quick, just a bit of a feel good moment. So there's a guy in America, just a guy on Twitter called Jerry, and he'd been tweeting out about his son is and I think his son's in some sort of like wheelchair, or he's got some challenges, put it that way. And he had tweeted the Young Bucks and said, you know, would you share this GoFundMe thing? And it was for a new bath chair for their son. Because the old one's fallen apart. And, you know, he kind of says, you know, we wish disabled things didn't cost so much, but, you know, we really need it, blah, blah, blah. And tweeted one of the Young Bucks and asked him, you know, could you retweet this? And 10 minutes later, the Young Bucks had pledged the full amount to get a new bath seat and then said, let's go one better, go get him the seat.
Wow.
So, yeah, nice to see nice stuff like that happen. So.
We need more stuff like that happening in the world. Three cheers for the Young Bucks, you guys. Good stuff.
Also, a very big shout out to the Bullet Club, Cody the Bucks and Marty Scurll. They did a promo about their San Antonio show on Friday, November 17th, which is obviously now running against NXT with Shawn Michaels as a guest referee.
Yeah.
And they do this fun promo where they're like, Cody's like, you know, they took all my dad's inventions, they sent you a cease and desist, and Marty Scurll's like, they took my umbrella, and then Cody was like, do you know what? We've got an invitation to the McMahons, you can get in for free. Come to our show in San Antonio, come and see it. And the Bucks are like, we don't pay for our house, you can't let them in for free. And they come up with an idea where anybody who has McMahon on their photo ID can get 10% off at ROH San Antonio. So I love what they're doing. It's so good.
That is very, very funny.
And Cody actually tweeted it earlier on today because somebody had tweeted him saying, somebody tweeted Jimmy Jacobs actually saying, typical guy leaves WWE, shits in WWE to get some heat, and some people rally around him. That's what Cody Rhodes did. It's bitterness. And Cody said, it's not bitterness to compete or dare to dream. Me and my crew can't be touched right now, and I don't mind telling the world. And then he has a quote, step on toes. The quote is from VKM.
So, love it.
I bet you any money that Vince is like, happy as a pig in shit at what Cody Rhodes is doing, because there's nothing he likes more than going away and proving him wrong.
Yeah, so, yeah, no doubt. No
fair
doubt.
Fair play to him for that.
Good on the old Bullet Club.
Kurt Angle is backstage with Sasha and Bayley. They're telling him how much they enjoyed him being back at TLC. Alicia Fox comes in. Kurt Angle calls her Alisa, which made me laugh hysterically, because he knows no names.
That is clearly not his forte. Yeah.
And he basically puts them in a triple threat match. The winner will be the captain of the team at Survivor Series. David, what does it mean? Can you just list to me the duties and the power hierarchy of being a team captain?
For the team captain, you would get to choose who is on your team. You get to choose where you guys eat lunch at. That's always very important. You would be leading any PowerPoint presentations. You would also be able to throw it over to and gather ideas from different people in a conference call, you know? Oh, you mean in WWE.
That would be what I meant.
Choosing people on the team is what I would reckon, yeah. And maybe actually choosing where they eat lunch. That could be kind of cool, right?
Sure.
Yeah, that would be a nice perk of being the team captain. Am I close? Am I close, Kenny?
Here's actually what you get. You get no power to choose your team.
Oh.
But you do get more TV time.
Okay, more TV time. What about lunch? Do you get to choose where you eat lunch?
You can eat in catering with everyone else.
Okay. Do you get to choose what you eat at catering?
No.
Okay. Can you choose not to eat certain things at catering? At least just be like, I'm not going to eat that.
We're not going to shovel stuff down your throat or anything.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's
me, Finn. So as we can see, sure. There's a lot of perks to being the team captain, as you have figured out. Anyway, we end up getting Alicia, Sasha, and Bayley with maybe one of the worst finishes to a women's match I've seen in about 10 years, when Sasha Banks is pushed into Bayley, but Bayley, who should by like the law of gravity fall outside, falls inside. And Alicia Fox pins her. So Alicia Fox is your team captain for the Survivor Series team. David, tell me how you're feeling about it.
I love it. I'm into it. I think that Foxy deserves to be the team captain. She's going to lead them to victory. Let's go red team. I'm all in, Kenny. I love it.
I'm a big Alicia Fox fan. I love how mental she is. So I actually think her being the team captain is the most interesting one that they could have.
No. That's exactly me and Val. I'm not joking. I'm not being facetious.
That's how terrible you are as a conveyor of emotion. That people automatically think you're taking the piss when you're saying you enjoy something.
No, I love it. I love it. Me and Val were both sitting there and we were going, God, I hope Alicia wins this. That would be so much more interesting than if, like, Bayley won it. And then she did, and it was great, and all was right in the world.
Can you imagine if Bayley was the team captain? Oh, God. High fives. So anyway, up next we get, if you listen to our Patreon review of TLC, an hour and 57 minutes, we spend about a good hour and 10 minutes dissecting the Elias and Jason Jordan feud. I make a very good pun about produce, which David enjoyed. And we talk about how much we want to walk with Elias. Somebody today on the Facebook community had said that his girlfriend, was it his girlfriend or sister? God,
His sister.
So his little sister watches wrestling, and the first t-shirt she's ever bought, she bought today. Whose t-shirt did she buy, David?
She's walking with Elias!
I do kind of want to buy that shirt. I'm probably going to buy it, to be honest.
It's great. It's an excellent shirt, and the WWE does not make excellent shirts very often.
Elias is strumming his guitar, singing about Green Bay. Then Jason Jordan comes out. They have a match. The match is just as generic as their match they had the night before. But in the end, We get a DQ and Elias smacks Jason Jordan with his guitar, and I guess the feud continues, and I continue to want to walk away with Elias and not walk towards a wrestling ring with Elias.
Yeah, I would love for Elias just to be a mouthpiece, the producer for numerous talents. Somebody posted the GIF of Elias whenever he was in Denver, and he just goes, "Don't start with me, Denver." And I laughed so hard whenever I saw it. Just the idea of coming out, first thing you do to address the crowd, "Don't you start with me. I'm having a good day. You're about to ruin it." God,
Denver.
In terms of just like character, I love Elias. I think that he is wonderful. He is, like, you look at NXT, and I would argue that NXT, by and large, over the past few years, has not really produced any stars of their own, right? Because, like, the most, over the past year and a half, I would say the most successful person in WWE to come in from the outside is AJ Styles. Yep. He was not a part of NXT. So, and, like, Finn Balor, not a star, he's losing to Kane. You've got guys like Nakamura, not a star, he's losing
the big issue is that in NXT, somebody is being booked by one guy, and then in the main roster, you're being booked by another guy. So, yep. And it's very clear that the two guys have completely different visions. And listen, sometimes I think the main roster's got better stuff than NXT, sometimes NXT's got better stuff than the main roster, but there's a disconnect that I think they need to figure out. At some point.
Yeah, no, they have to sit down and work out their differences, like, because it's killed the territory for me. I don't give one fuck about NXT now. Because why? As Val so eloquently put it, why? So all their top guys can go to WWE and be jobbers?
So, well, I think it's up to you. Like, for me, the way I position how I watch NXT is, see, when somebody leaves NXT, to me that's the end of that career. Like, yeah. I look at it as a separate career. No, I don't mean it that way. I don't mean it that way.
I know you didn't mean it that way, but that's how I agree with it.
But let's look at some of the other problems. So guys like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, I think have done good stuff on the main roster at various different points. The problem has been guys, if you look at the biggest problems of people in the main roster... So name two guys who you think on the main roster, you know, why are they not as great as they were in NXT? Just name me two.
Nakamura right there, and then let's go with, there's so many options to choose from. I want to say Bobby Roode, but from what I gather, I still don't watch SmackDown, but from what I gather, he's just losing to Dolph Ziggler, and he's only been up a month. So I think that's a little too...
Maybe Finn Balor?
Balor is probably the better one to go with, so I guess.
Finn Balor and Nakamura, part of the reason I think they've not had successful runs is because they were in... I don't think either of them really needed to be in NXT for a year. And they kind of sat around very clearly the sort of kings of NXT.
Yeah.
And I think it's a mistake. You know, you either need to immerse yourself in being part of it or not. And I'm not saying they didn't immerse themselves, but I just think it was very clear from day one that they were above it. Whereas a guy like Samoa Joe, I mean, I think it's a testament to how good Joe's run's been so far that people still think of Joe as a top guy, and he's not been on TV for 3 months. Or two.
Yeah, no doubt about
it. So, but anyway, up next on the show, we have Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman.
Let me interrupt you though. The whole reason I even brought that up, Elias is the one guy who's actually better on WWE than he was in NXT by a long shot.
He is 100%. 100%.
Yeah. Right. So, anyways, carry on.
Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman come out. We get footage of Jinder's challenge from SmackDown. Fair play to Jinder. The challenge was actually a decent promo, so fair play. And somebody said you could hear the pain in Kenny's voice as they had to admit that Jinder did something decent. It was painful.
I'll be perfectly honest. I still fast-forwarded through it.
So we get footage of Jinder's challenge. Then we get Paul Heyman saying, you know, this is the guy that could barely survive the challenges of Randy Orton and Nakamura. And he's like, you know, we live in the age of trash talking, but I haven't trash talked many of Brock Lesnar's opponents. I didn't trash talk, you know, Goldberg or Samoa Joe or Braun Strowman. He was like, but you, Jinder Mahal, the make-believe Maharaja, with your singy sing 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 brothers, which I always, one of my favorite things in life is to watch Paul Heyman pop Brock Lesnar. It's just my favorite thing. So he starts doing singy singy sing. Brock's like, it's so good. It's so good. So Heyman runs through a list of champions like, you know, Bruno Sammartino, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man Randy Savage, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, John Cena, Brock Lesnar. And he said that, you know, fans don't think of gender in that way, and that gender is a consolation prize when SmackDown got the shaft and the Superstar Shake-Up. Fucking hell. And Heyman said that, you know, the brand that brags, Brock Lesnar, is the flagship brand. Jinder Mahal is going to go to Suplex City. And he said, you know, the last time a SmackDown wrestler faced Brock, they had to stop the match. Great callback, I thought, in the promo.
Yeah, for sure.
People were in shock, and the locker room was in uproar. He said, you know, Brock violated the rule and regulation of the PG era. They accepted the challenge. I think this was a belter of a promo from Paul Heyman. Tremendous. Which I actually think that, I think that for most people, not David, but for most people, I think that they are a little bit more intrigued by the match based on Heyman's promo, because Heyman's so good, right?
Yeah.
So I Paul Heyman, 10 out of 10 here for me. What did you think of Paul's promo?
This was just tremendous. He basically started shooting on Jinder Mahal, and as Val said, that was exactly what the doctor ordered. That is what we wanted to hear from Paul Heyman. We wanted Paul Heyman to come out and belittle him. We wanted to... He couldn't say it, but I will. Jinder Mahal is sort of like a Make-A-Wish champion, right? It's like the kid goes, I want to be the WWE champion. And you're like, all right, there you go, kid. You're the champ. And that's more or less what Jinder Mahal is in the eyes of the fans. So this hit on all cylinders for me. I loved it. It made me happy. It made me gleeful. It made me giggle, Kenny. I loved it. But I stopped giggling as soon as I realized that Brock Lesnar, because they're making such a joke out of this, will probably lose to Jinder Mahal as a result of it.
I think that what they've done, though, is they have created that intrigue.
They've sowed the seeds of doubt in my mind, Kenny.
And that's going to be what I think is going to carry people. Like, I am going to be on the edge of my seat for that main event, praying that Brock Lesnar defeats Jinder Mahal. And if I get that F5 and that pinfall, that will be like Christmas. Christmas morning. And if Jinder wins, then I'm probably going to throw a fit, and it's probably going to be filmed, and maybe get a couple of new patrons out of it at least.
Yeah, I was going to say, whenever the Jinder rage ensues, our Patreons goes up. So I'm all about that. That's good.
But yeah, I think I thought the promo was excellent, so fair play. And I'm more intrigued about the match than I thought I would. When I heard about it at first, I was like, oh, fuck this. And now I'm kind of like, it is intriguing. And do you know what? For Jinder, Jinder Mahal here has a chance to prove the naysayers of him wrong. And I don't mean me here, but just general people who don't buy him as a champion, right? Because there's going to be a lot of people who don't watch SmackDown or don't watch the SmackDown pay-per-views who will be watching Survivor Series, who will be watching that main event. If he can put in a performance, because what he has done, he does carry himself like a champion. He has got that part of it down. He dresses like a champion. He is getting better in that regard. But he's still not one time showed the in-ring class of a world champion at any point.
Yeah.
If he can show that with Brock Lesnar, it could be a turning point for him. But he needs to show it. Like, this is the last chance saloon for Jinder Mahal, I think, because even Vince and everybody watching backstage, they're going to be watching this, and if he doesn't pull something out of the bag, I think it's the beginning of the end for him, for his run on top. That's just my take.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think that we won't have Jinder as champion at WrestleMania. I think that that'll come to an end at the Royal Rumble. I hope, but we'll see.
But again, you know, he almost has the power here to extend his reign if he can do something good. If he can,
he does.
So, you know, every night people have got a chance. So it's what they do with it.
It really is. But, I mean, man, you look at a guy like Samoa Joe who rose his stock greatly. And I just don't see that out of gender. But
But it's not been there. You're not missing it. Like, I watch every week. And yeah. The thing about his main events is they're not believable, right? That's the issue. They're not believable. That's the whole issue with the matches. And but, you know, this is mental enough that I kind of want to see it. I'm just like, Brock and gender? Okay. Let me see that. I want to see what the fuck Brock Lesnar is going to do to him. Like, anyway. But we'll see what happens. Up next, we got Charlie Caruso interviewing Kalisto.
Big Chuck
Caruso interviewing Kalisto. She asked him how he's handling the loss of his title. He looked at her like he'd just been smacked in the face with a turd, because that's all he knows how to do. He said it was his dream to be champion, and he would invoke his rematch clause tomorrow night on 205 live. You can't even say 205 live, right?
I mean, how many people are actually going to be, paying attention to that?
81 is my number.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
I think you might be over.
He said tonight's a bit familia. It's Rich Swann, Cedric Alexander, Grand Metalik, and Mustafa Ali. All people who would have been better champion choices than him. And they're going to face off against Enzo, Tony Nese, Drew Gulak, Noam Dar, and Arya Divari in a 10-man tag. Excuse me. So then we get the pre-match amble, and this was one of the funniest things that I've seen in so long. So Enzo has lost his voice, so Drew Gulak has a clipboard, and he's going to read a prepared statement from Enzo, but he does Enzo's shtick, but reads it properly.
Yeah.
How are you doing? And it was so good. Like, Sondra, you were correct. Drew Gulak is tremendous. I'm all aboard the Drew Gulak train.
I have been all aboard the Drew Gulak train since day one. And this is proving all of us correct who have been a fan of Drew Gulak. He is a breath of fresh air on WWE TV, let alone in that division. And I think they could turn him into a excellent manager type of character, because he doesn't look like your prototypical wrestler. So I think he could parlay this into a wonderful career outside of the ring itself in WWE.
Yeah, he is tremendous. Like I said it on the TLC podcast, I was making a drink on Sunday night, and all of a sudden I heard sirens on the pre-show, and I was like, oh no, Kurt Angle's going to be injured. It's going to be Steve Austin at Survivor Series 99 all over again. And I run into the room, and the siren is just Drew Gulak at the TLC preview panel trying to get attention. It's so good.
Wonderful.
We get this 10-man tag. In the end, Kalisto gets the win by pinning Enzo with the Salida del Sol. It's just sad to see Rich Swann, Mustafa Ali, Cedric Alexander, and Grand Metalik all have to sit and do a stupid lucha thing.
Yeah, no. It's not fun whatsoever, but I mean, they're getting paid. I guess they're just going through the motions at this point.
Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon, Kurt Angle's backstage early in the show, and Shane McMahon shows up, and they have a little kind of, segment together, where Kurt Angle is, he's happy to see Shane, thanks him for letting AJ Styles come over. Shane's like, no worries. And then Angle said, we'd love to have him here permanently. And Shane's like, that's not going to happen. and then Kurt said, SmackDown wouldn't stand a chance without Styles. Shane was a bit unpleased. Angle ran through the Raw talent compared to some of the SmackDown talent. Says he hopes Shane won't feel bad when Raw wins. Shane pointed out the SmackDown won last year. Angle said, I wasn't the general manager last year. And Shane was just there to personally tell Kurt Angle that SmackDown will destroy Raw. Then they had a laugh, shook hands, and the seeds were planted.
It was very happy-go-lucky.
I had no idea. Like, I thought that maybe Shane would, announce his team later on, but I never thought that what was going to happen was going to happen. So, fair play, they swerved me on it for once. So.
Yeah. It was a nice precursor to what would happen later in the show.
And what I think was good about it was when you watch it back, Kurt kind of instigates it.
Yeah.
Because he's like, you know, Shane's done him this favor of letting him have AJ Styles, and all he does is like say, oh, well, without him, your roster's shite. So Kurt's coming out for the main event segment. He's going to announce the men's team for Survivor Series. Now, before anything kicked off, you know, we just see Kurt's coming out. He's going to announce his team. What did you think was going to happen? Did you think he was going to announce his team and the five guys would come out? Or did you expect some shenanigans?
No. I expected shenanigans, but not due to Shane and company. I thought there would be dissension within the Raw team based on who was chosen. That's what I suspected.
So Kurt makes his entrance. He comes out. He's about to introduce the male team for Survivor Series when Shane McMahon's music hits. And there's a good like 30 seconds where Shane still hasn't come out, and Kurt's kind of looking at the ramp, you know, what's going on, and all of a sudden Shane McMahon is standing where the Shield come down in the middle, and he is with a plethora of SmackDown superstars. He has brought SmackDown to Raw. He brought over the full roster. That he brought over was the three New Day members: Rusev, Becky Lynch, Baron Corbin, Chad Gable, Tamina, Carmella, Natalia, Ty Dillinger, Bobby Roode, Mojo Rawley, Zack Ryder, Dolph Ziggler, AJ Styles, and Nakamura.
Just a treasure trove of talent.
Huge, huge roster of talent, and Tamina. And I'm kidding. Tam, you know I love you. So they all come down. Shane's there in the ring. They're all surround the ring. And Shane just walks up to Kurt Angle and says, "Under siege." Kurt Angle sells this so good. Like,
I didn't know that he was such a big fan of Steven Seagal movies.
Steven Seagal. Google what he looks like now. Jesus Christ. You thought Mickey Rourke aged badly. So Kurt Angle is like really kind of, you know, spooked by this. He kind of runs to the back. He doesn't run. He does like a Kurt Angle worried walk. And Shane just says, "SmackDown crew, go get him." All the SmackDown wrestlers go backstage. They encounter Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews. They beat them up after New Day pretended to be happy to see them. There's a great moment where Rusev does like a kick to them and starts celebrating like he's just won the world title, and it confirmed why I love him so much. He's just the best. Then Baron Corbin beats up a production guy. Now let me just preface this.
Sure.
Some fuck, right? Some fuck on Twitter tweeted me today and said, "Sorry, you got attacked by Baron Corbin." I said, "What?"
"What?"
He thought that I looked like the man that Baron Corbin beat up.
The job man? No.
So,
Kenny, can I clarify something for you and the listeners
at
home?
Sure.
Or on the road, wherever our listeners may be listening.
In a bath sometimes. Kenny, weird.
Kenny, you are a hideous, foul man. But you look nothing like that man whatsoever. He's completely wrong.
I mean, I'm going to choose to listen to the part of that I want to listen to.
Which is both you are hideous and you look nothing like him whatsoever. I still love you, though, despite your hideousness.
I mean, I like you a moderate amount, but that's fine. Trinidad James Witt on Twitter. Fuck you, James, first of all. Just let's get out of the open.
Trinidad, what are you
just
doing?
Just a big fat fuck you.
Trini, good man.
Now, James, I have been at the gym. I got weighed this week and I've lost 18 pounds.
Do you even lift, bro?
So you're saying I look like a chubby production guy, which I'm not happy. Not chubby, but like, you know, he's carrying a little bit of holiday weight. I'm not, right? I've been working out, and then he's ginger. I'm not ginger. Those people go through a lot of, you know, ginger people can essentially get disability allowance. That's, you know, don't be shitting on the gingers, you know.
Yeah, exactly. They're lovely people. What are you doing over there, sir?
But apparently I look
terrible of you to make those jokes.
Listen, I like ginger people.
No, not you. I'm saying it's terrible of that man to say such horrible things.
Horrible.
Comparing gingers to you, that's a horrible comparison to gingers.
For fuck's sake. So apparently I got beat up by Baron Corbin. Then Bobby Roode and Ty Dillinger very gently tip over a television in the most gentle fashion possible. Goldust, Rhino, Heath Slater, and Curt Hawkins all show up to try and fight, but they're all destroyed. Then they go into a locker room.
The A-team, you meant.
Yeah. Here's something that people apparently don't think makes sense that I think made the most sense out of every single thing that happened here. They go into a locker room and Jason Jordan's there. Who's the first person that runs to attack Jason Jordan?
Chad Gable.
Do you know why he did that?
He deserted him!
He deserted him. He cut a promo on SmackDown where he talked about how, like, Renee Young had said, you know, did Jason call you and tell you what happened? He said, no, he never called me. He never let me know. He just ran to Raw. And it was so, like, poetic. This is the first time...
A shitty partner.
And this is the first time Chad Gable has seen him since.
Yep.
It made all the sense in the world.
In the world to me.
Yeah, I thought it was great. Finn Balor and Matt Hardy get beaten up. There was a great kind of, like... Gallows and Anderson also could beat up. There was a great kind of connotation of, like, the club just got beaten up by a gang, which is like an interesting way to do it. Then the SmackDown crew and come up to the Raw female wrestlers: Sasha, Bayley, Mickey, and Alicia. No, it wasn't Alicia. It was Sasha, Bayley, Mickey. Who was the fourth one?
There was one other. It wasn't Dana Brooke, right?
No, Dana Brooke ran away.
I recall seeing it.
Anyway, so, and then Becky, Tamina, Carmella, and Natalia all dispose of the women. Then, in a great scene, they're walking through, and the Shield, like Seth Rollins, is perched above a fucking door and splashes on top of them. Ambrose has got a chair, they get the better of them. Then Rusev and Corbin drag Kurt Angle back to the ring. And then they get him in the ring, and Shane McMahon says, "It's Survivor Series. I want you to bring your gold medal, what's left of the Raw roster, and we will finish what we started." Oh, it's true. It's damn true. They leave, Shane's music plays, and SmackDown has fired the first shot. So I want to ask you, this has been a very controversial angle from a lot of different forms. Some people loved it, some people hated it, some people were conflicted about it. Take me through your whole thought process on the segment, any inconsistencies, and overall how you feel about the story they're trying to tell.
I didn't think there were many inconsistencies, but I'll be perfectly honest with you, Kenny, I wasn't huge on it. I saw Twitter blowing up. I know you went mental for it. It didn't really click on too many cylinders for me here. I don't know... It seems like something that's sort of haphazardly thrown together for this, and it seems sort of on the low end of the creative side, just sort of like, let's hash it out and see what we can come up with. How about we just have them attack them, and they come in and they invade Monday Night Raw, similar to the Bullet Club and similar to the WWF and WCW taking it right to their door and this and that. The one thing that sort of made it up to me, and I think will be a part of the story, and I could be just like Sandra hoping and making my own connections here to hope that it makes sense, but the idea of AJ being the man on the inside to get a feel for what's going on behind the curtain, I think that would be a really fun story to tell, sort of like AJ's the mastermind behind this attack. Because AJ's always wanted to take it to the Raw team. That's nothing new. He always comes out and he always says that SmackDown is the house that AJ Styles built. I think him leading the charge makes all the sense in the world, and I think that it would bring me in hook, line, and sinker to this story, Kenny. I would be all about that and all over it. That would be great. I'm not sure if that's the way that they're going to go with it, but otherwise I thought... It was pulled off pretty well, but I just think creatively it's a little lazy. I don't hate it by any means. I'm more in the middle with it, and as always, I want to see how it plays out before I come to pass the old judgment on it.
It's been interesting all day, kind of seeing the feedback to it and the kind of I was actually just reading a little bit of feedback there while you were talking, and somebody on our community just said, you know, why did Gable attack Jordan? And I'm like, I don't know how people aren't remembering.
What maybe they just want to see it through rose tinted glasses and they remember all the good times that they had. But I mean, they didn't split on the greatest of terms.
No, they did not. So the things that I want to try and address all the criticisms of the angle, because I think there are some. The thing for me that, obviously, I know I'm an eternal optimist, which probably pisses people off. They probably just wish that I would shit on stuff more. But to me, it was like I've just read the first chapter of a book, and it's very difficult for me to judge the book because I don't know what the other chapters are.
Yeah, exactly. Now,
it may be terrible, and if it is, I'll happily admit it. See Balor and Kane, but people were saying, you know, why did SmackDown do it? I think SmackDown have got plenty of reasons that they can use at their disposal if they want to. Like, you know, Daniel Bryan let Jason Jordan go to Raw. Shane gave AJ to Raw for 2 nights. What is Raw given to SmackDown? Nothing. What I would like to see as a story that I think would be really interesting is, first of all, I think that tonight on SmackDown and going forward, we need to have an explanation as to why this escalated to the reason that it did. The other thing to bear in mind is obviously they were always going to do Raw versus SmackDown, but they in the last 4 days have had to basically redo their entire build to Survivor Series because of Roman and Bray. So I think kudos to them for coming up with something exciting that was fun to watch.
I would rather have something that I'm confused about and willing to watch play out that's at least exciting and different than just tread the old tires in the mud.
Exactly. Now, to me, one of the things, like, I was thinking about, what could be the catalyst for it? And I think that, you know, Shane McMahon, I think what would be great, and what would maybe, because a lot of people are saying, why is Baron Corbin doing it? He hates SmackDown. Why Rusev hates SmackDown? Why would Dolph Ziggler do it? Why would Bobby Roode be okay being in the team with Dolph Ziggler? Why are the New Day all of a sudden, you know, leading an attack? It doesn't make any sense from a storyline perspective. And there's a point to that, but I think that what I think would make the most sense is for Shane to kind of say, listen, you know, let's remember how SmackDown gets treated here. The main event of WrestleMania was a Raw match. The main event of SummerSlam was a Raw match. We never get to main event pay-per-views. We always get the shaft. We always get given less talent. We get given an hour less of television. You know, like, really draw on the fact that Raw gets more opportunities. It means the guys make more money. And basically, it's a way to make all the guys come together for that common goal of trying to fuck over the other brand. I've seen some really fun ideas about, like, maybe Survivor Series becomes like this thing where it's like a scoreboard, and whoever wins gets numbers 16 to 30 in the Royal Rumble, and whoever loses gets 1 to 15, which could be just...
Oh, that would be, yeah, that would be really cool.
Really interesting. Or, like, whoever wins gets to take 2 picks from the other team.
Right.
Out of nowhere. Like, if they put some stakes on, I think that you can get away with doing it as just brand supremacy. I think it's lazy.
That's very lazy. But I would not be a fan of that, and I would actively dislike this angle if there's not more to that. I'll go ahead and lay that on the line.
But I think they should have more to it, and there's so much they could add to it that could be good. You know, there's so many questions. How are Raw going to retaliate? Who's going to be in the teams? Because, you know, Sami Zayn put a tweet saying, you know, I don't... let me get the exact tweet, sorry.
I don't fight for tyrants, I believe, was his quote.
It was... I fight for what's right, I don't fight for tyrants. Because why would Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens fight for Shane McMahon?
Exactly.
Or does Shane McMahon have to put aside his feelings to Sami Zayn and try and entice Sami Zayn to do it? That can also be good TV. But there has to be a reason for this kind of stuff to happen. But a lot of what I think people are upset about or not happy about is because we've not really heard why this has happened.
Yeah.
And that's the key. There has to be a why. Otherwise, it's just kind of tread more. It's not really that exciting. But, you know, are there going to be more stakes? Will Raw guys turn up on SmackDown? Who's going to be in each team? Are the teams going to work together? But from a storyline perspective, I think there's a lot of possibilities. So I'm excited about it because I think there are good places it can go. And also, I quite like the idea that leading the charge were not the main guys. Like, it was some other guys were getting some time, like Rusev and the New Day and Baron Corbin. I do want to have some sort of confirmation of why they all were together.
Sure.
So happily. And then, like you say, the AJ thing's really interesting. What I thought was really interesting about the whole thing is Nakamura just did not seem keen about really getting too involved. He didn't do much. Which almost says to me, is that a foreshadowing? Is Nakamura maybe not wanting to... You know, is it gonna
great would it be if Nakamura jumped ship and he's no longer on SmackDown losing to gender every week?
But they could turn that into part of the story. You know, Nakamura doesn't want to fight Raw. You know, what's he got against Raw? So, you know, there's lots of different ways they can do it. So I think SmackDown tonight's gonna be interesting. I've saw a few people saying that they are gonna be they're gonna watch. I mean, like, so I usually watch SmackDown the Wednesday morning. I'm gonna stay up tonight because I'm intrigued to see what the explanation is. So I think there are some people who are wanting to check out what they do, which is all the more reason that they have to fucking come up with something. And
yes.
And but what's your gut feeling? Is your gut feeling that they're going to do something with this, or is your gut feeling it's going to be a sort of tread the water thing?
I think it'll be a tread the water thing, which is unfortunate. But at the same time, I'm not going to count anything out just yet. We have to take it easy right now. We have to wait for things to play out. So I'm not going to, like, pass judgment, but my gut feeling is that it will probably disappoint us. But I'm hoping that's not the case.
I did send out a tweet earlier today to ask everybody else what they thought about it. We have 874 votes. I mean, I know it's a small kind of portion of the wrestling audience, but it's just the people that sort of surround us. We have 64%. Thought the angle was a thumbs up and they loved it. 27% thought it was a thumbs in the middle, 50-50, and only 9% hated it with a thumbs down. So it seems like a lot of people were willing to give it a chance at least. So
I definitely am one of those people. I'm not over the moon about it yet, but I'm keeping an open mind, Kenny. I love it whenever wrestling entertains me.
Indeed, there is no better time. So hopefully they're going to give us some stuff on SmackDown tonight to kind of explain why we're getting what we're getting and go from there. David, where can people find you on Twitter? I'm jumping ahead. Give me your scorecard for this week's Raw.
I really enjoyed this week's Raw. I thought that it was a very strong episode. Most of the segments were worth watching. I'm giving this an 8.5, Kenny.
Jesus. Wow. I'm going to give the episode a 7.5. Very rarely am I lower than you. I thought that... The thing that I've realized that I do a lot with these ratings and scores is I rate based on the thing that I enjoyed the most.
Sure.
So, like, if I'm basing it on the main event segment, it's like a 9 for me because I just loved,
right,
I loved it. But when I was kind of going through it, I was like, the women's triple threat was really sloppy. I'm not really happy that Alexa and Mickey James are continuing. Elias and Jason Jordan bores me to tears. I really wish Asuka had just killed Emma. But I thought that, and then obviously Kane killing Finn Balor was not something I was a fan of.
That was my big detriment.
Yeah, but I do think that the first 40 minutes of the show with the six-man tag and the opening segment, the main event angle, and the kind of, you know, and the Paul Heyman promo, they were all just tremendous. So yes, no, I'm going to bump up to an 8. I'm going to give it an 8. I'm going to give it an 8 this week.
Yeah, because even for me, even the stuff like the Asuka match and things of that nature, it was still very intriguing to me, and I didn't want to skip any of it. I wanted to actively watch it. And to me, if you got my interest, then you're doing an okay job.
So yeah, 8 out of 10 from me, 8.5 from David. David, where can people find you on Twitter if they want to get in touch and say hello or ask you for a picture of your penis?
I will not send you a picture of my penis because I do not want to scar you for life. It is at Zoopsoul, ZOOPSOUL. Lads, stop with, don't send the unsolicited dick pic, okay? All right? Don't do that. That's rude. That's very rude. Unless it's to me and that dick is, Richard Nixon. Then you can go ahead and send me all your funny Richard Nixon pictures. Feel free. You have my permission. That's called consent, Kenny.
You can get me at KennyMC1985, as always, inside_the_ropes. You can get tickets for Shawn Michaels, Kevin Nash, or Scott Hall at insidetheropes.co.uk. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, well, actually, half an hour in after we talked about tacos, shitting, and pizza crunches. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for tons of bonus content. And I think that what's interesting is that 2 years ago around Survivor Series time, I could not have been less interested in watching WWE. But last year and this year, when they kind of get into November season and we get some Raw versus SmackDown stuff, it kind of gives everything a little shot in the arm again before we get to Rumble season.
The brand split has definitely enhanced Survivor Series, which is always a good thing.
Indeed, and we don't have bragging rights anymore, which is a very good thing as well. That was a pay-per-view in 2009-2010. Oh, you would have loved it. How good is this? A pay-per-view a month before Survivor Series, right? Where it's sure. Team Raw versus Team SmackDown 5-on-5, the winner gets a trophy.
Oh, I love trophies. With a participation trophy?
The month before Survivor Series.
It's like they weren't even trying. Just like, throw some shit at the wall, see if it's.
David, this has been a long Raw rundown, almost 2 hours.
Very eventful Raw, though.
Very eventful Raw. It deserved our discussion, I think. Yes. Looking forward to talking about it more next week. We might even touch on what I'm going to do between now and Survivor Series is if there's any sort of like Raw stuff that happens on SmackDown or SmackDown stuff that happens on Raw, I'll ask the next week. So if there's anything big that happens on SmackDown, I'm sure David will watch the YouTube clip or whatever, and we can talk about it next week if that happens. What theme tune would you like to play us out this week?
Oh my goodness, there's so many.
Make it related to current roster happenings.
Oh, there goes Real American.
I can't listen to a Hulk Hogan song that says "When it comes crashing down, it hurts inside." The connotation is gone.
That is very fair. Well, I mean, on Patreon, we were going to play Kurt Angle's theme, and then we didn't. Correct.
That's true because we wanted to play. What did we play? Oh yeah, we played the Halloween theme. We played the Michael Myers theme because it was indicative of TNA.
Yes, we did. So it's got to be Kurt Angle's
yes,
theme.
Yes, here is the theme tune of Kurt Angle. Apart from when Sandra hears it, she goes, "Oh, the Patriots back." We'll be back next week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Take care and be kind to everyone that you talk to on the internet, in public. It doesn't matter. We're all people. We all have feelings. Do your best not to hurt anybody's feelings over the next week. It's a challenge. And I love you all.